Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Welcome to the best of Connecting Faith. This previously aired encore presentation features some of our most compelling conversations at noon on Faith Radio.
Hi, welcome once again to Connecting Faith. I hope you're having a great day, and we're looking forward to this year-end time when we can just take a little look back and celebrate all that God's done for us and look ahead with anticipation. And today's program, I think, will be one where if we can really get a handle on this, it could make a big difference for us in 2015. I'm Neil Staven, by the way. I always appreciate your company. Ted Ross at the controls. And Ted, we're going to talk about what's best next.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are counting down and kind of putting off. Okay, in the new year, then I'll start process. But you can actually start today.
That's true.
It's an option.
Are we talking procrastination or productivity today?
Productivity.
Yes. Oh, because I was ready to put it off. So we are going to bring back a conversation we had with Matt Perman during this week. We're just highlighting some of the best conversations we've had and some that I think are appropriate for heading into the new year. And Matt Perman is really a gifted speaker and writer and thinker. And he's written a wonderful book called What's Best Next? How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done. And it's all about productivity. And we've had Matt on a couple of times. In fact, we had him come talk to our staff meeting here a while ago.
That was really a blessing. I think it was helpful to a lot of us on staff here at Faith Radio, just how to dig into your email, something as simple as that. I mean, if you think about your email right now, he asked us how much is in there, and a lot of people were over 1,000, you know.
Embarrassing.
Yeah. He gave us some tips on how to get that down to zero every day.
Yeah.
And the book is well worth checking out.
Yeah, I don't know if you, can you really get down to zero?
No, I'm not quite there, but a little less than I was before.
You know, one of the tips that we talked about was, you know, it's, and we probably all know this, but it was, first of all, he talked about the why. That's just the importance of what we do. And then it's, when we get to doing our productivity, our things, is, you know, handle it once, kind of finish it, right?
The one-touch rule, yeah.
Yeah.
That works for cleaning up the house, too. Whatever room you go in, just do it once, get it done, and check it off.
Wow, you're starting to meddle. By the way, so I just want to thank you too before we get into today's interview. That if you are blessed by the ministry of Faith Radio and want to be a part of supporting us, your year-end gift is much appreciated, and you can make that online at myfaithradio.com. Or if you're sending a check, you just want to have that postmarked here by the end of the month. And thank you in advance for your generosity. Let's get to today's show. We're going to be talking about productivity, in fact, using as our topic today the book called What's Best Next? How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done. And if you've been a longtime listener to Connecting Faith, you know that we talked about this topic here, maybe 6 months ago, maybe it's longer, with Matt Perman. Matt's the author of this book, and he's in studio today, former director of strategy at Desiring God Ministries, and author of the new book, What's Best Next? It came out from Zondervan here last year. He has an MDiv in Biblical and Theological Studies from Southern Seminary and a Project Management Professional Certification from the Project Management Institute, and speaks frequently on topics of leadership and productivity from a God-centered perspective, consults with business and nonprofits, and we're happy to have you. Matt, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me.
We are looking forward to our conversation today, and this, I guess, maybe by way of kind of personal background, is productivity something that just, you got interested in? I know that you've been involved with the Desiring God Ministries from, Dr. John Piper for years. So was it his message, Don't Waste Your Life, or that book? Was that kind of something that got you going on this topic? So,
yeah, John Piper's message was hugely influential behind this book. His message in Don't Waste Your Life is that we should live our lives all in for Jesus in his glory, seeking to do good for others radically and creatively. And it's a fantastic book. But as I read that, I was thinking to myself, but how do we live this out? There are lots of practical things we need to know in order to do this. We can't just have the call to do this and be inspired without knowing how to navigate our lives. And in many ways, it actually makes your life harder when you try to live out the message of don't waste your life. So What's Best Next, in one sense, is a follow-up to Don't Waste Your Life. It makes the same call to live your life for the glory of God, but then gives practical processes for how to stay organized and be effective in the midst of living for Christ in the everyday.
In the beginning of the book, you offer a few myths about productivity, because there's lots. I mean, there's all sorts of books on this topic, seminars, all sorts of, you know, people, videos, people talking about it. So maybe we just start out with some things that that are myths about productivity.
Yeah, definitely. Well, one of the biggest myths is that we can think about productivity without considering God. And that's actually what most productivity books do. And in some senses, you can't really fault them for that, because they're mostly secular books on productivity right now. But what's really tragic about that, though, is the focus becomes on how to create your best life now, how to maximize your comfort and peace of mind and create everything, create a life that's going exactly how you want. The problem with that is, if you get your life set up so that it's just how you want it, but you exclude God, it ultimately leads to a dead end. So you can't ultimately have a productive life in an eternal sense without putting God at the center of it. And it makes sense to me, therefore, if we're going to care about productivity, we ought to care about God, because that's the only way to have an eternally productive life. So all these other books, while they give very helpful tips and strategies and tactics, they're missing the core. And so what I try and do in this book is bring that core into place so that we can truly be productive in an eternal sense.
So instead of, I mean, you do focus on the how, but you focus on the why first, right?
Yeah, we definitely need to focus on the why first, because if we don't focus on the why, we end up being misguided in our efforts. Productivity really is about getting the right things done in the right way and for the right reason. And the why is what orients us to that. It helps us know the reason we should get things done. Motives count. Motives are something we can easily overlook, but God looks on the heart. He cares about why we're doing things, not just what we're doing. So we definitely need to pay a lot of attention to the why.
Well, so is the end game, is the bottom line still the same, so that we can, you know, relax and live at peace, is that not why we're doing this?
Right. That's definitely not why we're doing it. It's the common thinking about productivity does make that the aim. But what I believe is we need to orient our view of productivity within the biblical teaching on the Christian life in general. And this is where books like John Piper's Don't Waste Your Life or David Platt's Radical are really helpful, because they help us see that Jesus' call of discipleship is that we would actually be willing to give up comfort and ease for the sake of his glory and the gospel. And so sometimes our lives are going to involve great suffering, not on purpose, but because sometimes that's what lies in the path of obedience to Christ. So productivity, thus, is not about making life go as well as you can for yourself so you can relax and spend time doing whatever you want. It's about equipping yourself to be more effective in fulfilling God's purposes in your life. So that orients everything in an entirely different way.
And I guess, again, the most, I guess, productivity training or tips are all about sort of managing ourselves, right? And you're saying that's a myth too, right?
Yeah, well, we need to put managing ourselves in the purpose of in the service of God's greater purposes. And we need to realize that managing ourselves effectively, though important, is not enough. We also need to know how to lead ourselves, which means knowing our mission, knowing our values in our roles, and doing all of these things ultimately for the glory of God.
Talking today about what's best next, how the gospel transforms the way you get things done. Matt Perman is the author, and he's the guest today. So is there a biblical approach to productivity? I mean, is there a kind of, can you encapsulate what that is, maybe in a paragraph or a sentence or a couple hundred pages? Or no?
Yeah.
You did it in a couple hundred pages.
Did it in a couple hundred pages.
Yeah.
Well, to encapsulate it, well, I'd say there's one wrong turn we can make, which is to think that a biblical approach to productivity would mean not caring about the matters of everyday life, like only caring about the spiritual side of things. And that would be a mistake. God very much cares about the full range of needs, physical needs, social needs, as well as spiritual needs. And he cares about all types of work. You don't have to be in Christian ministry in order to be living a productive life in God's sight. The heart of biblical productivity goes down to the motives and the reasons you're doing what you're doing. You need to be doing everything you do, even if it's making chicken sandwiches at Chick-fil-A for the glory of God and the good of others. And that goes to the really heart. Do everything you do for the good of others.
And again, I guess I was thinking, is this measurable? I mean, can we measure productivity if we're doing it with a biblical framework, in a gospel-driven format?
Yeah, that raises a challenge, because one of the myths I also talk about in there is the notion that productivity needs to be chiefly defined in terms of tangible, measurable outcomes. And while it is important to be able to measure things, lots of businesses obviously have learned that lesson very well. You can also fall off a cliff if you make measurement the end-all be-all. There are some things that are important and just can't be measured or can't be measured easily. And we need to recognize that in our view of productivity. Building relationships, it's kind of hard to measure that, but it's really important and it's an essential component of true productivity. So we need to have a place for both measurement and recognizing intangibles play a really important component of what true productivity is as well.
So, I mean, we use the word important a couple of times. I mean, isn't that one of the variables when we think about efficiency and effectiveness, that, you know, we want to focus on the important, not just to do things well?
Yeah, exactly. Because you can be – so efficiency is doing things quickly, doing them well, and effectiveness is doing the right things. Well, you can be very efficient at doing the wrong things. So that's why efficiency alone is not enough. If you become very efficient at doing things that don't need to be done at all, well, that's actually not very efficient. Peter Drucker, the great management thinker, said, "Nothing is more displeasing to the Lord than an engineering department that consistently turns out fantastic blueprints for the wrong product. That is just not helpful. It's not honoring to God, and it would be incredibly discouraging." But most productivity approaches do focus on the efficiency side of things, and that's just not enough. We also need to care about learning how to identify what the right things are to do, and then we need to care about efficiency.
Well, as we go on our discussion today, we'll try and cover both and expand it a bit as we talk a little bit about how the gospel transforms the way you get things done. That's the subtitle of Matt Perman's book called What's Best Next? And Matt is with us today. He is a former director of strategy at Desiring God Ministries. He does leadership and productivity consulting. Works with businesses and nonprofits, focusing especially in startups devoted to solving large global problems. We're going to spend a little time talking about how having a gospel-driven productivity will help advance God's kingdom in important ways. Just ahead with Matt Perman here on Connecting Faith.
Stay with us. More of the best of Connecting Faith is on the way in just moments. We're back now to the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired Encore presentation.
That's a question worth asking, and one of the questions that you'll have an opportunity to wrestle with in this new book called What's Best Next? How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done. It's about productivity, but it's more than productivity. It's GDP, which is not the same acronym we often hear about, but Matt Perman talks about gospel-driven productivity. I'll have him explain that in a moment. Matt's former director of strategy at Desiring God Ministries. He's author of What's Best Next? He's a frequent speaker and a consultant in the areas of leadership and productivity from a God-centered perspective. Matt, just say a word about GDP.
Yeah, so it stands for gospel-driven productivity, and I intentionally called it gospel-driven, not gospel-centered, so I could have that acronym GDP tying into gross domestic product, the measure of productivity, you know, for any nation. But the twist on that I have is that I define productivity for the individual, not just in terms of how much money you make, economic output, and that sort of thing, but in terms of, are you living a good life? Are you doing the types of things God wants you to get done? That Switchfoot song is great. This is your life. Are you who you want to be? And what we need to ask is, are we who God wants us to be? Because that's what productivity is really about. It's not sitting down and saying, what do I want to do with my life? It's saying, first of all, well, what does God want me to do with my life? What type of person does God want me to be? And that's what makes it really exciting. That gives a purpose that transcends ourselves and allows us to live our lives for a cause greater than our own interests.
So are there some, I guess we probably could think of a list, but are there maybe a few framework things when we ask that question? You know, what does God want me to be? Are there some things that, you know, in no matter what your life stage or you know, work situation, these are always true.
So. Yeah, that's great. Well, yeah, there certainly are. And the first thing to remember is the place to go to find out what God wants us to be is the scriptures. We don't got to, you know, go walk around in the woods waiting for some mystical bolt to strike us. We know what he wants by reading the scriptures. And he's told us very clearly what he wants. At the highest level, it's love him and love others. So that is to be the orientation of our whole lives. That is the center around which we design all of our lives. It's not about how do I make as much money as I can and retire early. It's about how can I live a life that shows the greatness of God to the greatest possible extent and brings the most benefit to other people. So a gospel-driven Christian lives their life for the good of others, and that becomes their motive and the principle behind how they decide everything that they do.
And I guess along with that, and you know, is generosity, because you sort of define those two as those key cornerstones, love and generosity, you know, relating to how things get done.
Yeah, exactly. Generosity should be a distinguishing characteristic of how we do things as Christians, because God is generous. He was generous in creating the universe, and he created far more than is absolutely necessary. He was generous in the gospel, sending his son to die for us so we could have eternal life. God is a generous God, and we are to imitate God, and that means that we are to be generous people as Christians, which means we are not just to be generous in, you know, giving money, the results of our work. Well, so I worked hard, I made some money, now I'm going to be generous in giving away the money I've earned. That's important, but generosity is to be taken to another level. We're to be generous in the way we do our work. Excellence in our work is a form of generosity because you're putting your whole self into it. And being willing to, for example, even just standard customer service principles, the customer is always right. That's a good principle because it reflects generosity. You don't want to be arguing with your customers. Well, you shouldn't think that. You shouldn't have felt that way. You know, that becomes irrelevant because the aim is to serve the customer and satisfy them. And that's not going to happen if you're, you know, getting in debates with them about whether they're really right or not. Just turn the other cheek, let them have their way as much as possible. That's a form of generosity.
But somehow it doesn't seem like it would sort of lead to our productivity, because I was just thinking, and maybe you can react to this, is productivity about being proactive as opposed to just sort of letting life happen to us? I mean, if we're generous, well, yeah, my door's always open. Come in, yeah. Bother me anytime you want.
Yeah, so it can it can have some detrimental effects. You need to have generosity guided by a purpose, because if you always are just letting people drop in, well, then you're not going to get a lot of your central tasks done. But there's a recent book on this called Give and Take, which is really good. And the subtitle is Why Helping Others is the Key to Success or something like that. And what he shows based on his research is those who are generous at first actually aren't as successful as others. But in the long run, they become far more successful than others. So there is kind of a dip, but you get through the dip and you become more successful in the long run. And the reason for this, like if you think of a business, is because a business that is generous builds goodwill with its customers, which makes customers want to come back. So it generates repeat business. Now, that's something that takes some time to kick in, but in the long run, it creates far more enthusiastic customers. They're going to come back. So there's repeat business. They're going to be telling others about the company. I just read on Facebook a friend of mine whose iPhone had a problem for like the fifth time or whatever. And even though it was outside of the warranty limits, Apple gave him a new iPhone because they wanted him to be a satisfied customer. And he posted that to Facebook and 2,000 of his friends saw that. That's great marketing on Apple's part. It only cost them whatever costs them to build an iPhone. And now thousands of people are hearing about Apple's generosity, and that's building their brand. and going to result in more iPhone sales that will make up for the cost of that.
Love and generosity relating to get things done. We're talking about what's best next, how the gospel transforms the way you get things done. Matt Perman is my guest. You know, talking about productivity, and I'm just curious if this, you know, the idea of sort of the talking about the why as opposed to just the how, has this become, is this sort of a new trend in business that, well, we're suddenly now, you know, it's about business ethics and values and things. So is this just kind of this, you know, just sort of riding along a new wave of trending?
It is a new trend, and that's a great observation. Well, it's a trend, and it's actually been a lasting trend that started at least in the 80s. And some of the best business books started making the case that leadership is ultimately about values, like Tom Peters' book, In Search of Excellence. Jim Collins is big on this in his book, Built to Last and Good to Great. What these guys have discovered is that the most effective companies are based on values. Not first, this is interesting, the desire to make money, but the desire to make a contribution. And the reason for that is because people are motivated by values. And leadership is about motivating people, not controlling people. And that's why it's so important to lead from values rather than command and control. So this is a growing trend, and it's a trend that is very much in accord with the scriptures, something that I think Christians should affirm and celebrate and build upon. And that's, by the way, an important characteristic of gospel-driven productivity. We are to be aware of secular thinking and learn from it. We aren't to only learn from the Bible, because God wants us to learn from creation in the realm of common grace. So when we see things in the secular arena that are good and true, we should embrace that and celebrate it, not reject it because, oh, they're not Christians. They didn't get that from studying the Bible. If it's true, we should embrace it and celebrate it. And this is one of those trends that we should do. But what we also need to do here is take it to the next level, though, because it's not ultimately just about values. It's about, well, what values should we have? Not all values are good values. And of course, as Christians, we want to value what God values. And that's really the key to an effective life.
Well, as you're talking about how companies are sort of, you know, getting on board with that, realizing that companies are made up of individuals. And so if we as individuals are looking at making a contribution, that's going to make a difference too. But again, it has to be the right kind of contribution. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Making the right kind of contribution. It's really important because you don't want to, well, as Jesus says, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? And that's one of my biggest concerns about most of the productivity books out there. They don't deal with that. They kind of set you up to gain the whole world, become wealthy, become successful, have a lot of time for yourself, be able to retire early, and all those things which may be good in themselves, they leave out God. And you can end up having this deception. Jesus calls it the deceitfulness of riches. You think everything's going well because you're making a lot of money, you have a lot of time, but you've forgotten God. And so at the end of that road is a dead end, but you don't realize it because you're kind of tricked by the fact that everything is going well at the present moment. So we need to think ahead, and we need to base everything we do on God's purposes.
We're going to talk more in a moment with Matt Perman. We'll talk about, you know, is this just something that can only happen in ministry, you know, and maybe we'll get to some of those questions. Where do we most often fall short or get hung up when it comes to productivity? Talking with Matt Perman today, who has authored the book, What's Best Next? How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done. Love to have you join the conversation. More with Matt Perman in a moment.
Thanks for being with us for this encore presentation of The Best of Connecting Faith. We're back with more in just a moment. Welcome back to an encore presentation of The Best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired program.
A good word out of Colossians, right? Whatever you do, do it all to the glory of God. Stephen Curtis Chapman opening up this second portion of today's program here on Connecting Faith. And we're talking with Matt Perman today. We're talking about what we do and how we do it and why we do it. The title of his book is called What's Best Next? How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done. It's published by Zondervan. Matt's a former director of strategy at Desiring God Ministries. He has an MDiv in Biblical and Theological Studies from Southern Seminary and Project Management Professional Certification. He's a frequent speaker on leadership and productivity from a God-centered perspective, particularly consults business and nonprofits focusing on startups devoted to solving large global problems. We're going to get into some of that as well. And Matt, I guess maybe, you know, to be thinking about God-centered or God driven productivity, gospel driven productivity. This isn't just limited to ministry, right? It doesn't just mean if we're a pastor or a ministry leader, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's not just for people in full-time ministry. God values all work. There are not two classes of Christians. It's not that pastors are closer to God than truck drivers or marketing executives. Everything we do can be done for the glory of God. And that is just one of the amazing things that the scriptures teach, and it infuses our everyday lives with meaning. You can be at Chick-fil-A making chicken sandwiches for people, and you're glorifying God if you do that for the glory of God and the good of others. So the call to be productive in a gospel-driven way is not a call for everybody to abandon their jobs and become a pastor. If you feel called to do that, go for it. That's great. But you don't have to do that to please God.
And yet, this by living in this way, I mean, we are, in fact, advancing His kingdom, right? And we can be a part of God's kingdom advance.
Exactly. We can be a part of God's kingdom advance in whatever we're doing, as long as it's, well, a lawful vocation, and we're doing it for the good of others. That's the key. You know, Romans 12 basically teaches us that worship is about all of life. It's not just singing songs on Sunday. It's not just preaching the gospel. We are to do everything that we do for the glory of God and according to His ways and His commands. And when we do that, we're able to honor Him and worship Him in literally everything that we do.
And I guess it probably goes without saying that God cares about our productivity, right? I mean, this is actually, I think I saw in your book, I mean, you talk about even using the word sanctification, that there's part of this, right?
Yeah, it is definitely, it is a component of our sanctification. Learning how to get things done is a component of our sanctification. It's easy as Christians to kind of dismiss productivity and think, oh, that's secular, that has to do with, you know, this world and time management. Let's focus on evangelism and preaching the gospel. And all of those things obviously are very important, but God has also created a world in which we need to get organized in order to get things done, and productivity helps us do that. And interestingly, what you find then is maybe you'll have more time for evangelism if you know how to get organized, because you're not spending as much unnecessary time, you know, spinning your wheels or dealing with hard to keep up productivity systems. So you have more time to invest in evangelism and the spiritual activities. But you don't have to. You don't have to make everything about that. God has created a world in which He cares about the realm of common grace, just as He cares about the realm of saving grace.
You know, obviously God gives us spiritual gifts, but we also have natural talents and abilities, God-given talents and abilities. So, you know, if we're not sort of naturally organized, I mean, do we just we find our way to be productive without being sort of organized by the world standards?
Yeah, well, if God, it's a wonderful thing. God gives us gifts, and we ought to seek to be productive in accord with our gifts as much as possible. We'll definitely be more effective when we operate that way, and we'll enjoy it more. Productivity. Peter Drucker made an interesting observation. He was a great management thinker and consulted with great leaders for 50 years, and he found that none of them were actually instinctively effective. They all had to work at it, but all of them who did work at it succeeded in becoming effective. And the lesson there is we can't just say, oh, productivity practices don't matter. I'm just going to go on and do things anyway, whatever. It is important to have a method to organize ourselves. At the same time, though, if that doesn't come naturally to a person, not all hope is lost. It is possible to learn those methods. They might not become, you know, the most exciting thing to you, and you might not focus on it the way someone else who's naturally inclined in that area will, but it is possible for everyone to do this. Just the heart is to realize it's not first about the techniques, though, and the tips and tactics. It's first of all about actually character, things like love and generosity, self-discipline. That's really the foundation of productivity, because that's the foundation of our decision making.
Is there an area where maybe we often fall short, or we get hung up in our attempts to be more productive?
Yeah. Well, definitely email is one of the biggest places where we get hung up. Well, it's so easy with email to fall into reactionary workflow, because you can have your day planned perfectly, But boom, you start getting all of these emails changing your course. Your boss might need you to do this, and that wasn't foreseen the day before. Someone else might need this. And all of a sudden, we realize we're just reacting to things all day long, and that can end up being very frustrating.
Do we, is one of the keys planning out your day, or is it, do you plan it out minute by minute, or is it more sort of the grand scheme of things? Say, I'm going to be available for God to use me however, wherever, whenever.
Yeah, it's important, very important to plan your day, but to do it in a flexible way. So if you try and plan out every minute of your day, that's just going to be defeated, and you're going to be very frustrated. For some reason, it's very easy, though, to fall into that temptation. Well, at least for me, to think you can plan out your whole day. And that's just not going to work. But on the other extreme, if you don't plan out any of your day, well, then you're going to be floating without a rudder throughout the day. You're going to be drifting. So you need to hit the right balance. And that's a different spot for everyone. For some people, it might mean planning out about 30% of your day. Identify the top 1 to 2 tasks you want to give extended time to and work that into the agenda for your day, but then be available for spontaneous needs that arise through the rest of the day. Some people might plan out 70% of their day, and it's going to differ even from day to day for each person. But the key is to get that right balance between structure and freedom.
You have a couple of acronyms, and I think part of that is sort of that flexibility. I'm trying to remember what the acronym is where you use that. But let's talk about maybe some framework for us to be thinking in terms of productivity.
Yep. Well, with going about your day and planning your day, POD is a helpful acronym. Plan, organize, do. So when you sit down to plan your day, the first thing you do is plan, which by that, in that context, I just mean list some of your main priorities for the day and just write them down. And then organize. You're not going to be able to do everything that came to mind. So you're going to, organizing involves first getting rid of some of those things. And then second, just creating a basic structure. Instead of just thinking, oh, I'll do this when I can, create a time block for a few of those, maybe. So create, you know, a structure that facilitates your ability to get things done. And then do. Don't just create the structure and leave it at that, which is easy to do, but actually take action and do those things that you've planned. So POD, plan, organize, do.
Matt Perman is my guest. The book is called What's Best Next? How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done. It's published by Zondervan. And it is, you got some great, helpful strategy and really helping us with not only some of the practical how-tos, but really understanding some of the whys and what does it mean that we live our life for the glory of God and for the good of others? What does that look like in our day-to-day lives? You'll get some very practical insight from this from Matt Perman. One of the acronyms I think he uses, is it DARE?
Yes.
That's one of them. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, DARE is the main acronym. So it reminds us, first of all, the guiding principle that productivity is really about daring to help others, daring to serve others. Our guiding principle is to be bringing benefit to people, and we need to be doing that in adventurous, creative ways. We need to be somewhat unconventional and interesting in how we go about things and help others. So DARE helps us remember that.
Well, let me just interrupt before we go on to the others. So do most of us live our life we're self-focused as opposed to other-focused, right?
Yeah.
We're not daring to serve others.
It is so easy to be self-focused. I mean, we almost fall into that by default. It's really just so easy to do that. So that's why one of the points I'm trying to make is be intentional. Get yourself out of that. Adjust your default from focusing on yourself to making your focus be about others. And that's actually the most exciting and fulfilling life. Jesus said it's more blessed to give than to receive. So if you make your life first about giving, not just money, but time, talent, knowledge, contacts, and just finding ways to be of service to other people, you'll have a much more fulfilling life. So DARE tries to remind us of that. And then what it stands for, the first step is define. That means know why you're here, your mission, which is to serve others to the glory of God. Architect is about creating a structure for your life. And, you know, there's a lot of ways you can do that, but one of the best ways really is to just have a basic framework for your week, a basic template. I generally do this on Tuesdays, this on Thursdays. Don't make it overbearing because that's just going to fall apart. But have a basic framework for how you go about your week. That's architect.
And I would think in some cases that is sort of already established, right? Well, I always have a meeting on Monday and there's another one on Wednesday. So those things already get just sort of locked in.
Right? Yep.
So,
a lot of that is locked in based on where you work and what your manager needs you to do. So, and that's a helpful thing. Right now I'm actually being self-employed. I actually find a hard time with the architect step because I'm the only one deciding that. And I find a unique challenge in that.
You want me to call you every week and just say, you know, what are you doing, Matt?
Come there on. We go. No. Why don't you architect that into your week?
Sure. Perfect. All right. So that's the D-A. There's R-E.
Yeah. So the R is for reduce. A lot of times we just have way more to do than we can possibly do. So it's important to eliminate the unnecessary. And so after you've architected your week, you might say, wow, there's actually more in my week than I can even do. So then it's time to get rid of some stuff. Take some stuff out of there. That you might do that by delegating to others. You might do that by just getting rid of some things altogether. But you need to be on the lookout to reduce, especially in this era with information constantly coming at us. We're especially tempted to do more than we're capable of doing. And then E stands for execute. You know, you can have a great structure in place and have a great mission, but if you're not actually doing things, well, it's not going to do you much good. So E is the execution step, and that comes down, that involves very basic processes too, like managing email, planning your day, planning your week, how to go about those nitty-gritty things that we usually think of when we think of productivity.
We're talking productivity. We're talking GDP today, gospel-driven productivity, and how that's distinctive from many resources that are out available these days about what it looks like to get things done. In fact, that's the title of Matt Perman's great book called What's Best Next? How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done. And Matt's in studio today, and we'd love to have you join the conversation as well. We'll talk more with Matt in just a moment.
Stay with us. More of the best of Connecting Faith is on the way in just moments. Back now to the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. This is a previously aired Encore presentation.
Well, we're at 46 past the hour talking with Matt Perman today. Matt is author of this wonderful book called What's Best Next? How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done. It's published by Zondervan. And I want to go back to, we were talking about DARE and the R standing for reduce. And we're talking about, you know, kind of organizing things so that we don't get more to do than what we can get done. But isn't that always the case? There's always more to do than we can get done. So how do we deal with that? How do we decide, I guess?
There's always more to do than to get done. And the typical answer to that is set priorities, which, of course, is crucial and important to do. But as Peter Drucker points out, the hard part is not setting the priorities. It's sticking to the priorities. And so he says you need to set posteriorities, which means defining what you will not do. And that really is the flip side of setting priorities. Once you set your priorities, what you need to do then is realize you need to say no to most of the things that are outside of your priorities. So the core principle to productivity really is exclusion. It's what you don't do so that you can concentrate on what you really should be doing. So really an iron determination to say no to things can really be one of the most important things for being productive.
That's, I guess it's hard to know what to say no to, though, isn't it, sometimes? I mean,
it's so hard, especially as Christians. We want to be of service to people, well, like we've been talking about.
Yeah, so how does that work with generosity and love? Right?
I know, it's so hard. Well, one of the ways it works is by making sure we have the right attitude. If we say no because we have this attitude of looking down on people, these terrible people always wanting things from me, et cetera, that's a horrible attitude. Likewise, saying no out of arrogance, you know, thinking, well, I'm just so important. I don't need to deal with these people. That's a terrible attitude too. We need to say no out of the right attitude. And then, and this is key, there needs to be a way for people to get past the no. There really does. So at the end of the day, it's not ultimately about no. The people that really do need access to us, that are, you know, even outside of, you know, our typical circle of access, colleagues and things like that, they do need to have a way to get past that no. So that way the people who really, really do need to get in touch with you will be creative and hardworking to find ways past the no. And that's how you really know if someone you said no to is someone you really do need to say yes to.
Okay. You know, you mentioned Drucker. One of the things that you talk about in the book is maxim, do first things first and one at a time. That's pretty powerful.
I like that. That is so helpful to me. And what that means is, so when you sit down to start working on your tasks, the fundamental skill of productivity is to identify what's most important for you to be doing at the time. So first things first, or what's best next. So do first things first and then one thing at a time. So that means when you start working on a task, do it all the way to completion. Don't distract yourself in the middle of it. Don't get halfway through and then go check email or go out to lunch. Work all the way to completion. And then when you're done, maybe take a break, do other things. And then when it's time to do your next task, start that and work on that all the way to completion. And that's really the building block of effectiveness. It allows you to use your full energies on the task at hand so that when you're working all the way with your full faculties and energy. And then when you're done working, you can be done working totally. The thing to avoid is this pseudo work, where you're kind of half working, half resting, or half working, half doing this other thing. That's a productivity killer, and it makes things take three times as long. You'll have far more time to enjoy yourself if you avoid pseudo work and focus entirely on the task at hand.
We sort of bought into the idea of multitasking, right? Somehow say, yeah, well, we can do more than one thing at one time.
Yeah, we totally have bought into that, and that's even been institutionalized now. A lot of job profiles list multitasking as a key skill they're looking for in the person. And like, boy, well, that's horrible. There have been brain studies that have been done and shown it's literally impossible to multitask. The human brain cannot focus on more than one thing at a time. And that's why the first things first and one thing at a time is so important for productivity. What we can do is we can background task. I mean, you can go running and listen to your iPod. So you're background tasking the running there or the music. That's not multitasking though. Multitasking is trying to focus, do two things at once that both require focus. And that's simply impossible. And we just need to stop trying to do that.
Is the strategy different if it's a sort of a big task versus a small task in terms of doing that one thing, doing the first things first and one at a time?
Yeah. So with big tasks, you need to be willing to break them up into small chunks. So if you do first things first and one thing at a time without breaking up the big task, you might be like thinking you have to work for 18 hours straight on a certain task or whatever, and you're just going to run out of energy and your whole day is going to be ruined. So you need to break the large tasks down into smaller chunks. And a lot of people have found that 90-minute chunks are most effective, that we have natural energy cycles that run about 90 minutes, and that can be the optimal time for focusing and then taking a break.
So even though we take a break, it doesn't mean that we're necessarily done with that, but there is value. So it's not just, like you say, working 18 hours a day.
Exactly. You know, one of the things that I find that is so hard and so challenging is when I do have a very large task, which I break down, if I, you know, get a chunk of it done one day, but you know, I have to do more tomorrow. Sometimes I'll get concerned like, oh, but I won't be able to work on that tomorrow because there's going to be various emails that come unexpectedly and require me to do this or that. So it can be, I find that to be one of the biggest challenges of being able to stay on task with the large tasks, because there are so many other things that come up and that can cause us to kind of almost try to do too much all at once, because we're afraid otherwise we're not going to be able to do it at all. And that's why it comes back in part also to being able to say no to the things that are outside of the main tasks you need to be doing.
Which I guess, you know, maybe, I don't know if we sort of touched on it, I guess, but is it okay to not get stuff done? I mean, you know, if we're really trying to have gospel, you know, directed productivity, then, you know, shouldn't our standard be even higher that, so we're working for the Lord here. So we got to do, we really have to do better.
Yeah. Boy, it is okay and important to let certain stuff not be done. It's hard to do, but even Jesus in Mark 1, I forget where he was, but he was healing and preaching. And then the next day, all these people wanted to be with him again. And he said, we have to go on to the next town, for that's why I came. So Jesus had a purpose there, and he allowed the purpose to define what he left undone. And, you know, in one sense, it can feel heartbreaking to think, well, there's other people left here that aren't going to get healed. And I think, a Christian is going to feel that. They're not going to be cold-hearted about the stuff they can't do. But they realize, like in that case, if Jesus had just stayed in that town further, well, what about the people in the next town that needed him? They wouldn't have had an opportunity to be healed. So either way, you're saying no to things. So why not say no to things on purpose rather than letting circumstances make that decision for us?
What's best next? How the gospel transforms the way you get things done. You'll find a great resource with the book. And in fact, you've got some resources online too. Just say a word about what's available at whatsbestnext.com.
Yeah, there's far more I wanted to say than what fit in the book. So I created an online toolkit for the book, and that's at my website at whatsbestnext.com, and you'll see a link right there. Or you could just go right to whatsbestnext.com/toolkit. And there's some chapters that didn't fit in the book. There's some checklists, a daily productivity checklist, a weekly planning checklist, how to plan your week. I reduce it to 3 simple steps, and a whole bunch of other resources as well.
So do you have a favorite tool or technology, or do you use a notepad? I mean, just never go without a notepad, or what works for you?
Never go without a capture tool. Okay. I like the Moleskine journals. Okay. Those are really, there's just something that they have a good design. And there's something about the design that actually makes me want to use them more. So design is an important component, actually, in helping us be more productive. But in terms of software, I prefer OmniFocus. It's for Mac users. And that's where I keep my to-do lists and project lists. And yeah, there's an iPhone version, and it's really pretty cool. For Windows users, back when I used a Windows computer, I liked Microsoft Outlook. I found it to have a good task management system.
Well, there's a lot more we could talk about, but it's been a productive hour, I think, which was the goal, right? Is to talk about productivity from a gospel perspective. How the gospel transforms the way you get things done. That's the subtitle of the new book, What's Best Next? Check out Matt Perman's writing regularly as he blogs at whatsbestnext.com. Matt, blessings to you. Thanks for coming by today and encouraging us.
Thanks so much, and thanks for having me.
Well, thank you once again for listening to Connecting Faith. Hey, if you missed a part of today's show or would like to just listen to it again, you can always go online to our show page. It's at myfaithradio.com, then click on Connecting Faith, and you can get the podcast archives of that. In fact, Ted, we could do our own. You could do your own best of 2014. You wouldn't have to take our opinion on it.
Sure, load up the queue. People do that with music all the time. It would be a great idea to do that as kind of a retrospective on the year here.
Sure. And I invite you to do that. Check out all the podcasts. Just literally tons of resources available online on myfaithradio.com. I know there'd be something there that can really be helpful to you. And, of course, these are all shareable as well. So if you've got somebody you know that would really appreciate maybe some discussion on productivity, although I'm not sure how you'd send that to them in a kind way. You need to get your life together.
Here's what you need. You know, actually, a real application story real quick is my youth ministry leader at church. She's in charge of children's ministry. I was really blessed by our conversation with Richard Melheim a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And so she went on and listened to it, is going to implement some of those things at church.
Oh, good. Neat. Yeah. All right. So you'll find great resources online. Again, it's the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. Excited about tomorrow. Jason Jaggard on New Year's Eve is going to talk about SPARK, one small risk at a time. Do you have any risks planned for the new year?
They always happen spontaneously.
Well, that's right. Okay. So I hope that you'll tune in for that, because that'll be encouraging as well. And if you'd like to take a risk, maybe in terms of giving and trusting God to supply your needs, we'd love to have you consider Faith Radio as a place to give you a gift. MyFaithRadio.com. Thank you for your year-end giving, and thank you for listening to Connecting Faith.
And this has been an encore presentation of the best of Connecting Faith on Faith Radio. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk with you again soon.